Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Today, I'm joined by Eugene Wu, the CEO and co-founder of Vengage, a leading platform for creating infographics and visual content. Welcome to the show, Eugene.
Thanks a lot, Phil. Happy to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you. I love talking to entrepreneurs on the show. And I'd love to start off with this first question with what does success mean to you?
That is a great question. One that I've pondered a lot on. So I'm glad you asked that question. So to me, success is having the freedom to pursue what I want to do without obviously worrying about money, without worrying about, you know, all the other things that that one has to worry about. And it's about playing that long game. Like, can I do what I really enjoy for hopefully for the rest of my life, right? And I think that is success. You know, I think about entrepreneurship as a long game, as an infinite game. I want to be in the game, that success, as opposed to like just exiting and then sitting around with a pile of cash and not knowing then what do I do next. I think that to me is the core of success. I have some other details if you want to jump into that about this whole, you know, I think people talk about like what you do, you know, what this pursuing your passion mean and all that. We can jump into that in a little bit, but that at a very high level is my definition of success.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Yeah, I think a lot of entrepreneurs love the idea of the creation, the forming things, the developing things, and it seems like the monetary side is an after effect of that process. And so I want to talk about Vengage. For those not familiar with it, what does Vengage do and what problems does it solve for businesses?
So Vengage is a design platform. You know, I guess the simplest way to describe it is that it's kind of like Canva. If you know, a lot of people have heard of Canva, sort of a more niche version of Canva. We specialize on infographics and more professional type designs. Especially this whole thing on accessible design. So when I mean accessible, I mean accessible to not just to everyone, but also accessible to people with disabilities and all of that. So that's Vengage. I've been running it for 12, 13 years now. So it's been great. And we're still innovating. We're still building new products.
So let's talk a little bit about AI. Obviously, with my companies, AI has completely transformed everything from the way we do business to content creation to speed to coding and everything else around our platform. With AI transforming so many industries, and design is no exception, how do you see AI shaping the future of visual storytelling and design?
I mean, I think it's going to completely change the workflows, that's for sure, because, you know, I'm sure a lot of us, if not all of us, have used AI, you know, image generation models, things like Midjourney, DALL-E. I think ChatGPT just came out with their new version yesterday, 4.0's image generation. And when you think about the typical workflow of a designer, you know, a lot of times they are literally drawing the design. Like if you want, let's say, an illustration of some logos or some illustrations like of icons or anything that will go on, let's say, on a website, right? You're drawing it a lot of times by hand. And the AI essentially can replace a lot of that process. So there's this whole pipeline of what is the workflow of design. Usually you start out with some inspiration and then you kind of take that inspiration and then you start actually designing or drawing or creating that design. And then you finish up, you know, polish it, and then it goes to a website or to, you know, a print media or something like that. I think with AI, AI is in every single step. In the inspiration step, instead of going to, let's say, Pinterest or something to look for inspiration, you can just generate the inspirations, like generate a whole bunch of, I'll go back to the icon example. You know, lots of websites have icons. Just generate a set of icons for my website in all these different styles. And it'll do it. And then you can go like, I like this style. And then you can just talk, you know, you're having this conversation with the AI. Oh, you know what? Put a bit more shadows, make it a little bit less formal, give me the doodle style. So you can do all that kind of stuff that you would do if you were working directly with a designer. You would have this, kind of want to say it's like, if you've heard of vibe coding, you can kind of vibe design with the AI and then make all these tweaks. And then, yes, you're still doing some design. You're still going to probably for the most part, at least now, you're still going to have to finish off the last 20, you know, maybe less than that, maybe 10% of the process. You're guiding the AI, you know, all through that workflow. But you're using AI as kind of like a designer, in a sense, a design assistant or you know. And that's how I use it. I'm not a designer by trade. I'm an engineer by trade. But I use AI now as sort of my wife design. I use an AI to design a lot of things, from websites, from simple things like logos and icons to like an entire website.
Yeah. And I think it's fascinating. I'm kind of similar with I'm using AI. I am using it as a back and forth tool to help me generate ideas and craft things. But I've seen the internet lately, it seems like we're bombarded with, I call them like lazy AI users, where it's just, it's clearly AI, man. And it's so bad. Right. You know what I mean? It lacks the personalization. And I think that negatively affects the brand image of that company, right? I mean, have you seen
100%,
that? Yeah, right? Ones I get, you can see like the text is AI generated, so it's not quite there, right? Or it's got weird graphics or the extra fingers, or sometimes it'll take, like, if it's a content, it'll take two different topics that are kind of unrelated and kind of smash them together. And it's like, well, kind of, but like a human would never do that. You know what I mean? And so I'm wondering if you've seen that type of thing, and specifically in the design industry, where people just not using it appropriately. You know what I mean?
100%. I think the most common example is if you get really lazy with prompting. So prompt engineering is a thing. You still need to learn how to prompt things properly. If you're just really lazy with prompting, you just go like, give me an image. You know, you have, let's say, a Twitter post. Get an image of like whatever. You just describe it really lazily. You'll get like the stereotypical image that, like, let's say you're using ChatGPT that DALL-E has. And I'm sure you rec. I can't describe this look, but it's sort of this like kind of cartoonish kind of image look. And as soon as I see that type of picture, I know like, yeah, that is AI generated. It looks really fake. It was cool like 2 years ago when it came out. It's not cool anymore. And as soon as you put that out, I'm like, this person either has a bot doing these images, or they haven't evolved in the way of prompting, and they haven't learned how to use the model properly, because DALL-E can generate way better looking images if you learn how to prompt it properly. And if you kind of, you know, do that back and forth and refine that image more, right? And I think that separates the people who kind of just think like, oh, I'll just use AI and it's like an easy win and I don't have to like do any work, versus those who are treating AI sort of like a tool. You know what I mean? Like, it's still a tool. You still have to refine it. You still have to like learn, how do I prompt engineer so I get the result that I want? I still have to read other people's, you know, go to forums and maybe like Reddit and read like, what are people doing? How are they prompting it? How are they getting this very specific look? You know, and that is still a lot of work, in my opinion. So you're still treating AI as a tool and as a system, as opposed to like replacing, you know, what I would do 100, you know, completely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love your analogy of using it as like a designer or a designer assistant. Because the same thing's true if you're working with an individual and not AI, right? Like my wife, she's very artistic herself. She's an author. And when she hires somebody to design character art, she's got a great designer that does her work. But I am convinced that he has done the best work he's ever done for my wife, because she's very specific in what she wants. You know what I mean? She's got a really high bar.
Yep.
And she gives him a ton of detail. She throws in images and references and all of that stuff. And I compare the work that he does to her versus the other stuff he does. And I was like, man, that's like a totally different artist. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I think it's the same thing in what you're saying with AI. So,
yeah, that's a great example. I mean, it's you still have to put in a lot of work, and you still have to, you know, the standard or the bar of excellence and the quality is something that the creator, like you and I or your wife, still has to keep. Right? You can't just say, hey, just create a bunch of illustrations of characters for me and then just take whatever, you know, this AI gives you and just like publish it. You have to keep that bar, and you have to know, essentially, you still have to have good taste, right? Like you still have to have good taste, and you still have to know, you know, what is good. If you're creating copy, what is good writing? What is good copy? If you're creating illustrations and designs, you still have to have good taste. Like, I'm not a good designer, but I think I have fairly good taste in design. I know when a design is bad, it looks bad, and I can sort of correct it by giving feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great analogy. You don't necessarily have to be the designer, but you have to be a pretty good idea of what you're looking for, which leads into the next question I want to talk about, which is, you know, the brand standards and visual communication. We recently collaborated between TechStrip and Vengage around a collaboration talking about the power of visual communication. And so at TechStrip, we recognize the importance of visual storytelling and our rebranding. From your experience, why is visual communication so critical for businesses, especially in marketing?
I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? We are visual human beings. Like, that's our, I would say, our most used senses, if you go for like five senses. And our eyesight and our visual is the thing that sort of drives, you know, most of what we do. And so that's number one. Number two, humans process visual information a lot faster than text information. You may think like, oh, you know, if I read it, you know, obviously if I give you a paragraph of text and I give you a picture or an image, like, you're gonna be able to interpret that image and look at that image and know what's going on a lot faster, right? And you can tell, like, from you know, in social media, what are the formats that work the best, like visual formats, videos, now short form videos, you know, like the TikToks and the Reels and Shorts on YouTube are the ones that are doing the best, because humans just really, you know, we process that information faster and we really just enjoy that, you know, visual format as opposed to reading, you know, reading. I love reading, don't get me wrong. I love text. I still, you know, I'm still a very kind of a text person, but it's just a lot easier for humans, for all of us, to process visual information.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, a lot of times when you're hearing somebody or you're reading text, you may miss errors. But when you see something visually that looks off or is not consistent, you pick up on it and it makes the brand feel cheap, you know? That's what I've seen a lot. And we kind of went through that with TechStrip in the past, where we were a startup, grew really fast, and realized, man, we need to come up with some brand standards around here, right? Because you don't want to look cheap, you know, especially when you're dealing with high-end clients. And I think that's one of the biggest things that you can do for a brand if you want to stand out, is have those brand standards and those consistencies. And that's what a lot of companies are lacking, especially when they're relying on AI to generate their content or their images.
100%, right? Like, brand identity is mainly visual. Like, sure, you know, I can recognize TechStrip, I can recognize, but and any popular brand like Nike and Apple, but what do I really, like, that's just a word, Apple, Nike, right? But what am I really thinking about? I'm thinking about their brand. I'm thinking about the swoosh, I'm thinking about the Apple, or, you know, the whatever the brand, like an Apple, like, I'm just imagining the iPhone or the MacBook, just the style. Like, it's the visual image that comes to my mind when I think of a brand, right? And I think if you don't have a good visual brand identity that's consistent, it's very difficult for somebody to remember you. It's very difficult for someone to convey the vibe of your product or the vibe of your company, which is a lot of marketing, right? That's all marketing. Essentially.
Yeah.
So it'll be very difficult to market your product if you're missing that element.
Yeah, I agree with you. And again, connect with your brand, right? Personally connect right. with it if they don't understand it. So I'd like to hear any standout examples you have of how a business has used infographics to successfully increase engagement and conversion.
Sure. I think, I'll use Vengage just because that's the simplest form. I'll go back even further. So my first company was called Visualize Me, and it was an infographic. It was a resume company. And it's, all of you have had resumes or have resumes. It's a fairly boring, text heavy kind of a document. So I kind of made this website that would take your LinkedIn profile and then like would spit out a resume, a visual resume in a form of an infographic. So it would like kind of summarize your talents or your skills. And then it would have a graph on the number of years on the experiences. So it looked kind of nice. It was acquired by another company, so it doesn't exist anymore, which is kind of sad. I feel a little sad about that. But we use infographics to market that company by creating infographics of popular, back then it was like Ashton Kutcher. So this is like 13, 14 years ago. So it's been a while. So I'm like, no one's going to recognize these. So we created these resumes of like popular celebrities back then. I guess Ashton Kutcher is still popular now, not as popular as he was like 15 years ago. And we created a couple of those and they actually went viral. And it was pretty cool. And we got, we kind of like benefited from that virality. And we still see people today using infographics. I think Tesla uses some infographics under Twitter. I follow them about, the rocket ships, the sizes and all that. So they are still people. I mean, there's tons of people that use infographics to convey information. Sorry, I don't mean Tesla. I mean SpaceX. SpaceX, I remember seeing it very recently. I mean, they're breaking records every, bigger and bigger, rocket ships. So I definitely saw one like very recently on the size of I forgot what it's called now, the biggest one that they made recently. And it was like, just, you can show the contrast in an infographic. I mean, it's one thing to just say, yeah, this one's the, 2000 times bigger than the previous one. But if you see it in infographic, you could actually see like what the difference is, right? And it is very, it can sort of evoke this, wow, this jarring and surprise moment using infographics. So anyways, those are the two examples I'll leave you with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had a manager years ago that said, you should break everything down so like a fourth grader can understand it. It's kind of always stuck with me. It's like, sometimes we get so complicated and it's just like a simple picture connects it. And suddenly they're like, I get it. Right. And when you're dealing with a mass audience and somebody who maybe is only looking at your image for 3 seconds or less, right?
Yeah.
You have to convey those. And so I think they're fantastic for that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and I just remember like on e-commerce, like this was this trend. I mean, I guess it's not a trend, but it just got on e-commerce, on Instagram. It's fairly common now for people to have an infographic of their features. So if you're buying like, let's say a face cream, there'll be like a, 3 points, like some, like an icon illustration. And then like, the, bullet point, like just high level topics of why this face cream is different from like all the other face creams. So it's used quite a fair bit. We may not call them infographics. We'll call them like, yeah, it's just an image. It's like an explainer image, but those are all infographics.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a scrolling through. It's, you have that quick second to capture it. Right. And so I think that's what they work well for as well. So I want to get into a little bit about your entrepreneurship. I absolutely love talking to fellow entrepreneurs. It's a topic that I'm really passionate about. And as a fellow entrepreneur, what's one lesson that you've learned in building Vengage that you think every business owner should know?
I think I'm going to go back to your original question on like what success is and what, and how do you kind of make sure that you can kind of continue with that success over a long period of time? Cause I have met, I've been in the game for a while and I know, a fair amount of people, even people who have exited. I know lots of people who have exited. They've sold their companies for millions of dollars, like some, tens of millions. And a lot of them aren't as happy as you would think they are, which I think the lesson to me is that it isn't about like the exit. Entrepreneurship isn't about, oh, it's not like a race, it's not like a marathon. Oh, I finished this marathon, I sold my company and I'm done, right? Because now what are you going to do with the rest of your life? You know, like, let's, you know, like I'm in my 40s. Let's say you're in your 40s if I sold my business, I still likely have, probably another 40 years left. What am I going to do for the rest of my life? I'm not going to just sit around and, sit on a beach, and that doesn't make me happy. So I think my lesson there is that you kind of got to figure out what you really like to do. And for me, I like building products. I like tinkering. I like experimenting. I like building. That's why AI is fascinating, because it allows me to do that very quickly, as opposed to like before, I would take 6 months to a year to build a new product. Now I could build a prototype in like a week, or, sometimes in a day, right? Because of AI. So I think the key there is like figure out what you're really passionate about. Use the success of the money that you get from your business. Don't like sell it. Don't like completely like, trash it. Still run that business, because that's your cash, flow. That's your cash cow. But make sure you can pursue what you really enjoy for the, play the long game, essentially. And then forget about what people say on social media, what the media says about, oh my God, so-and-so. Forget the FOMO, right? Like, oh, so-and-so exited for like a gazillion dollars. And I've met people I'm part of like some CEO peer groups, and I've met people who've exited for like $300 million. And when I asked them, what do you do now? And they're working for this much bigger like corporate company. They're like, I hate it. Like, I want to get back in the game. And like, and that person has to start from zero again, because it's hard enough. It's hard. I mean, it's hard to start a business. Like, imagine having to start it over again from zero. I mean, it's hard. And I've met people who've sold their businesses and their second one just didn't work out. Their third one didn't work out. And I'm like, and I still have my business. So I'm like, I'm glad I didn't sell my business, because, I'm looking at this other person and they're struggling. I mean, they have money. Don't get me wrong. They're struggling because now they don't have a successful business anymore. And they have the money, but they're not able to spin out the second or third business as successful as the first one. And I'm like, they should have just kept the first one, So that would be my advice, is like, forget about all the FOMO stuff. Forget about what people say success is. Figure out what you really like to do, and then continue it as long as possible.
Yeah, that's the part I think people have difficulty understanding. Money is great. It's fantastic. But what is just as or more important is purpose. And if you can only sit on a beach for so long before you get bored out of your mind, right? And something I learned from selling a business and then starting a new one is you go from wearing a certain hat, right? Because you're changing those hats as your business grows, to then you start a business. And for me, it was like, I'm starting from ground zero. Like, I'm building the product, I'm selling it, I'm marketing it, because I got to be very hands-on in the beginning to like figure it out. And there was a humility check when I did that, because I was like, wait a minute, I was running this company before, And now here I am like talking to people and trying to pitch this product, all over again. And I could see how that'd be difficult to go from that, an exit, to like popping in and trying to start from ground zero again. It's a difficult process for sure.
Yeah. And then kudos to you. You've done it well. So, if you can, there are people who can do it, and that's great. They can, redo it over and over again. But my thing is like, if I don't have to, obviously there's a lifespan for every business, I understand, but if you can evolve with the times, and that's what I'm doing now. I'm building like sort of like the AI generation of tools. I'm still in the same kind of market, sort of the same problem, same ideal customer profile, similar, but basically with a new set of, we're building a new set of tools. So it's kind of exciting, kind of like building a different version of design tools now using AI and pretty much powered by AI.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
No, I was going to say the other thing. I'm sure I know you know we were talking about your horse farm, but I'm sure the other thing I think I would want to you know kind of give advice to people who've had some success, since this is a podcast about success, is that instead of thinking of money, just like, oh, I need to make, let's say, $100 million. For some reason, all these round numbers are there. Like if I ask someone, if you had asked me, I know 10 years ago, what's my number? I probably would have just said, yeah, 100 million, just because it's a round number. It sounds great, you know. And a lot of entrepreneurs think like, I got to reach this number. But I think, you know, my thought has evolved since then. Like I now think of success as, I use the lifestyle ladder, which is kind of popular in like financial. I don't know if you've heard of it. Essentially, there's a couple of steps or levels. And each level, I kind of have like criteria, like, essentially, what does my house look like? What are my other properties? If I have a vacation property, how much am I traveling? How much am I donating? How much is my discretionary? So I have all these like things on the table, and then I got like level where I am now, and then level, you know, one, level two, and level three. And then, you know, it just goes higher. I'm like, okay, what's the next step? The next step is like, I want a bigger house by, you know, with a view. I want to have a vacation home with a lake. You know, I want to travel like first class and travel like 2 to 3 times a year. And so I have all these ladders, and instead of thinking of money, I kind of think of them as steps. And I'm like, yeah, where am I right now? You know, I'm I'm in some areas in the second level, and in some of it, I'm in the third. And so it's great, because I look at this, I'm like, I don't really need that much more money, because I'm already at the level where I'm really, really happy. And I don't need to move. And I don't have this level where I need to own a jet or a private yacht. I don't have that. It's not on my ladder at all. So I don't need $100 million. At least I don't think I do.
Yeah.
So anyways, that will be my other advice. Instead of thinking of a number, think of like your lifestyle ladder. How do you want your lifestyle to be? And then you'll figure out like you probably don't need $100 million.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that. I think that kind of connects it to, yeah, your lifestyle and your lifestyle goals and where you want to be. And yeah, what am I going to do with a private jet? Exactly. It's like $100 million, you know, $1 billion. Like, what do I know? I don't travel that much. You know what I mean? I don't want to travel that much.
Exactly.
I had a thing last year. I was traveling a couple times every month all over the world. And it got to the end of the year, and I said, I don't want to do this anymore. You know what I mean? So when you're looking at that lifestyle thing and you're like, private jet, no, I can tell you for a fact, because that means that I'm setting myself up to travel all the time. And I hate traveling.
So, yep. Yeah.
That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah. If I don't know if this is on YouTube. I can send you a copy of what the lifestyle ladder looks like. You can see it visually. I have it visual, obviously. I'm a visual guy. Yes. But yeah, I agree with you. So on my lifestyle ladder, I just put out the stuff that I like, that I enjoy. Me and my family, obviously, I've got kids as well. Sure. And, you know, I've got a thing on like what I want to do with my kids, how much money do I want to leave them, and in there. And it's not a lot, to be honest, because I don't believe in like spoiling my kids. And I, you know, I always tell them, this is what, you know, I got that from Shaq. Like, I'm rich, you're not.
Yeah.
You're broke, poor, you're broke.
Yeah. Teach them the skills to get it, right? But yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. If they want to buy something, I'm like, you better figure out how to buy it, because I'm not buying it for you, you know. Or buy the basic stuff, what you need, but I'm not buying anything crazy. Like, don't ask me to buy you a $300 pair of shoes. I'm not doing it, you know. So that's kind of how I look at success. And that will be my advice to entrepreneurs. Instead of just chasing some blind number that someone told you or you read on like TechCrunch or whatever, like, oh, I got to exit. And you're comparing yourself with all these other people that, to be honest, nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
I'll be honest, like, they don't care. You shouldn't care. They don't care.
It's funny. I was talking to my wife this morning. I said, I think in the next title of my book is going to be Nobody Cares About You. Like, nobody cares. You spend so much time focusing on other people, and nobody cares at the end of the day. Yeah, only you care. So,
yeah, I would say, you, your wife, and your family. Like, it's a very small circle. That people,
very small.
It's incredibly small. Like, for me personally, like, it's my family, it's my family, pretty much, and maybe one or two other friends. That's it. Like, it's a very small circle. You know, like five, like eight people. That's it. Like, you know, I don't have that many friends. You know, other people may be a bit bigger, but I don't think it's going to be more than like 10 people, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And really all they want to know is, are you happy? Are you healthy? You know, that type of thing. That's,
exactly.
Yeah, they're not really concerned. How much does he got in his bank account right now? Can he afford that private jet? Yeah, I don't think so. And if they are, then they're not the type of people you probably want in your life.
Exactly. They're not going to care when you exit for whatever, you know, like they're not going to care, to be honest. No. They're not going to care. No. Yeah.
And well, we're coming to an end here. And I just wanted to really thank you for your time today. You know, incredible insight. And how do people learn more about Vengage?
You know, we're on all the social media. So just, you know, or just type in Ven. It's really hard to spell Vengage. Talk about branding. But it's, yeah, there you go. It's it's with two N's, Vengage. But we're on, you know, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. LinkedIn is probably the best. We have, you know, we're mainly focused on LinkedIn. So just go into LinkedIn and just type in Vengage and you'll find it. And oh, and that, those are mine. Yeah.
As well, if they want to follow you on
Instagram. Yeah, I'm Wu Yi on everything, on Instagram, on X, and on LinkedIn as well, I believe. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Eugene. We learned a lot from you. And I want to thank our audience for listening today. And until next time, we'll see you on Successes Podcast. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Phil. Appreciate it.